Hello and welcome to Learning Grounds. I'm Zach Chase, and for this episode, episode 9, I talked with Corey Sass in Moose Jaw, Canada. Corey is an English teacher in the high school there and is enamored with story, and I was thrilled to be able to talk to her. She's wise and thoughtful and just a caring practitioner, and we had a great conversation about how story can affect students, how students can affect story, and how listening to those stories can change people's ideas about the people they're listening to. You can follow Corey at Corisaas on Twitter, and I really recommend that you do. I love reading everything that she writes on her blog. It's just thoughtful and makes me think, oh, wow, I should be a little more thoughtful in what I write. So sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and enjoy this episode of Learning Grounds. All right, so you have your cup of coffee?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. What are you drinking?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
It's strong. I seldom make coffee at home, but I decided to today.
I appreciate you making the exception.
Okay.
I'm drinking, I don't know what I'm drinking either. I think I'm drinking an Ethiopian blend from a local coffee roaster. See, that's me keeping it local.
Yeah, one of my students brought back from one of her travels, and it's in the cupboard, and I thought I'd make it. So.
Perfect. So tell me where you are and what you do at the place where you work.
Where I am right now is in a dining room that pretends to be a dining room, but it's mostly a laundry room and an office and a library. But I teach and learn along, mostly senior high school students and some middle year students. And we tell stories, we share stories. Listen to each other.
That's excellent. I wanted to talk to you because you've been writing an amazing amount, and it's beautiful. You know, just your writing is so just beautiful in the way you think about teaching and learning. And I thought, well, this is somebody I want to talk to and make sure other people know what you're writing about. So, what's the project that you're doing right now? I feel like it's not just Corey wants to sit down and write every day.
Well, Corey wants to sit down and write every day. And as soon as we're done, it's great because I have to write this afternoon. I have to write about, I was asked to pretend, or to pretend that something didn't happen, that a story wasn't shared with me. And so I have to write about that today. I have to write about that. So that's So I have to write. And it's not a project. So I'm not comfortable with that. That's as much as breathing and being a mom, although I feel that being a parent is a choice, but and one that I love. But I believe that when you share stories, and that, I mean, stories are who I am, we then are bonded to where we are. We become safe. Because we can retell who we are, right? So it's more than a project, right? Like it's who I am, because I grew up telling stories. So my dad was a storyteller, and everything that I learned about life and was because my dad listened. He taught me how to listen. He didn't talk. So when I would come home after school, which is really neat, Zach, because I live one block north from where I grew up. So I never feel like I actually left home. I just moved a block north. And the trees outside still sound exactly the same. So when I would come home when I was a little girl and I would sit at the table that my dad made, he wouldn't even get up to turn on a light. And he was a teacher and he had a basin filled with marking. And I would natter. And he taught me how important I was by listening to my stories.
And talk about that. Did he just tell you, did he say to you anything? Did he say, tell me your story? Or did he just sit there and realize that you had a story that you were going to tell anyway?
He let me know that I had a story that was in me that was important to him. He honored my stories. He didn't need to tell me. Just the way that he was with me, our relational way of being with each other, and how well he honored that. Now, there's been a few times in my life where Dad has said, okay, I have something that I need to share. Or sometimes he'd, you know, we'd have a turkey carcass and he'd say, you know, we need to go for a walk and feed the coyotes, or come with me and you really need to know the name of these plants. And I know that there was a teaching there.
So how do you transfer that? I mean, that is a beautiful and lovely connection between a daughter and her father. That's not necessarily the way a lot of people see schools. They don't necessarily see them as such personal and intimate spaces.
But they have to be. They have to be, Zach. They have to be. They have to be. School spaces have to be relational spaces. I mean, if our kids, and our kids should be curriculum makers in our space, the curriculum should come from them, and it should be our stories. And especially because if we ignore those stories that are so important and so valid, and I'm not talking about necessarily, but they are including the stories of, you know, how we put together the little building block houses, like literally the toy houses, but how we build a stick house, or went in our youth, and how we learned to make meals with our grandmas and our aunts, and how we played with our pets when we were younger. But it's also the stories that we write down in our journals and share. These are the curriculum making spaces that should be shared.
So how do you, is this kind of philosophy of education something that's shared by all the other teachers in your school?
No.
How do you navigate that space?
It's messy.
I would imagine it's messy, to say the least.
Oh, it's interesting. You're sucking up my blog post for today. I honestly, being very transparent with, or trying to be, because I guess the post that I'm writing today is about that, I have to share. I think that I have an obligation to share my my belief that stories have the power to bond kids to place. And if we want our kids to stay and be successful and be happy at school, then we have to open those spaces for conversations and honor their stories as valid as any other agenda or stories that are happening in any other school space. So,
have you been able to bring some other faculty members around to that idea?
Well, certainly I have an incredibly supportive admin, and that's important, and inviting people into our space and inviting kids to share. So, it's messy work. It's messy work, and it's not comfortable work. And I don't think it's supposed to be comfortable work. I think when we learn, I think even at the end, and our kids are tired. I'm tired. But then when I don't know if so much awareness is supposed to be all glittery and shiny. Someone that didn't understand some of the stories that had been shared and made some assumptions. But I think that that's what grand narratives do. They assume things about youth. They assume things about kids, and they put them on these little narrow paths that all kids do this and all kids belong this way. And that's why it's really important to honor stories, because then you honor the differences among everyone.
So can you give me an example of a story that you've shared or that's been shared with you recently in class?
Yeah. We share about abuse and addiction openly. We share about violence in our homes, in our past. We share about how uncomfortable we are about our futures. I share my own story of how I came from, my parents are adult children of alcoholics and alcoholism and drug addiction was so much a part of my life. My daughter grew up, and I still feel the effects of being labeled a single parent. And so there's all these statistics of how she's supposed to be, and that is not a story that I choose to live by. And there are so many kids that are easily storied one way. It's not ever easy to be storied one way or to then to create counter stories, but either you are finding a story to live by or you choose to tell your own story. You know, right now I'm pausing. I'm hesitating to tell you because there are so many silent stories. So what about the story of suicide, Zach? That story isn't shared. And those are behind closed door stories. And we go into the admin's office and we close that door and kids don't share. So when that story happens in our schools, and it happens frequently, kids don't share, but they all know it's happening, and the staff knows it's happening, and then some of the staff does not know that that story is playing out. But the ripple effects are there. And why? Why do we silence that story? I am so confused by that. I have no answers. I have no answers, and I'm so...
Is it... So, and I'm kind of imagining things recalling things I've heard in the past when these issues have come up. But I've heard a lot of people say, like, this isn't what schools were designed to do. That it's an overreach. That this should be other parts of the community. That this should be family. That this should be spaces of faith. That those are the spaces that for historically have picked up these pieces. And that if schools start to take it on, then they're kind of, there's not just an overreach, but that it's allowing other spaces to kind of devolve.
Okay, and great. In the place where I teach and learn alongside youth every day, there are many, many kids that don't have parents or don't have any active supports in their world. I have an 18-year-old student in grade 10 who was not in school for 3 years. He's been sober and clean for 18 months. Okay, so who honors that story? Who talks to him about the stories or who listens to his stories? And given the chance, I mean, that's incredibly powerful when he begins to share his story. And not only that, but when you say, okay, these should be places of faith and places of family, then what about when those places of faith and family say, we want to shelter our kids? Well, that's great, but that's pretty narrowing, I think, too, because what about that 18-year-old kid who lived on the streets and, you know, he's facing court charges and has done a lot of things, but has a pretty profound story to share. I mean, I think it's really important to honor our differences and not live separate from them. So we become more connected, right?
I am completely with you. It helps that I taught kids English and language arts, so I understand the importance of story. I wonder though, when does that kid learn science? When does that kid learn history? When does that kid learn math? And what's the place of story in those disciplines, in those spaces? Is it the same? Is it different? What does it look like? Are there teachers in your school who are kind of saying, oh, I want to honor story, but I teach algebra too, and I'm not sure where that fits?
Well, it's really interesting that you say that. We are subject area teachers, the high school teachers are. And the senior science teacher, a young student, we have open mics and the kids come and they share their stories. And we have set parameters around open mic and why that's important. And the kids have created that, and it's important, and we invite the community. But when this young woman, when she approached the mic, and platform is a really important part of why story is so important. And she shared, and the senior math and science teacher never was able to see her in that perspective, in that way, and was so moved, able to learn about her home and her family, but not only her home and family in terms of those biological connections, but where she goes after hours and on the weekends, and why she is sad most of the time. The math and science teacher said to her and to myself and others afterwards, she was so thankful that she came to that event, and she has supported every other event that we've had because she wants to continue to hear the kids, And that's what story is, right? Hearing the kids.
So it sounds like it's not necessarily that science or math teachers, or kind of basically and not English teachers, it's not like they need to kind of squish out some of their curriculum to make room for this, but instead we kind of need to see between the spaces of disciplines. Am I hearing that right? That to take the time to look into what's going on in an English classroom, and I would imagine vice versa, to take the time in an English classroom to go and see how stories are told, and I would imagine a different way in math and science.
Yeah, I'm smiling as you're saying that. Yeah, and absolutely, and then create spaces so that the story then creates the story creates a storying place. So whether that is separate from the science place that is the science room or the math room, it can then be, to seek out that is it a noon hour space or a morning space or an afternoon space, but to listen attentively, to attend to those stories. So is it those 5 minutes or those 3 minutes with students? But it is a different way of living and being with students, because it's we start from story.
Could you talk a little bit for a second? You used two words or two kind of terms a couple minutes ago, but you were talking about something else, and I wanted to make sure that I heard what you were saying. One is the idea of story as a verb. You said that, you know, we are storying students. And then the other is the silent stories. And could you give a little, could you talk to me a little bit more about what those two things mean?
Well, we do story. Those are the agendas, right? And they're very similar. But all over the spectrum. So we do story. So when you think of all the ways that kids are silenced, So a kid is tall, a kid is short, a kid is bright. Those are all but.
Okay. So I guess what I'm struggling with,
create. So storying is a creation, and the act and process and living and being with the agendas that come in a school landscape. But not only that, because of course it comes so longer before, it's our cultural traditions and it's everything that the kids bring with them. And if kids and teachers living alongside them are not allowed to honor kids, then they don't have the ability to be who they are, because of course stories are who we are.
So what do you mean by honor? Sorry to interrupt. I just want to make sure. I'm thinking like, I think I know what she means. And then I thought, if someone's listening, I want to make sure they know what she means too. But so when you say aren't able to honor students, what does that look like?
Well, if you are listening to my story, if I am listening to your story, and if I share with you about, if I share with you about a story that happened or an event, let's put it that way. So a tip, like a traditional, if I tell you a story and it's there, it exists. And I don't try to change it. I just live with it. We live alongside our stories. That is honoring story. But so often stories are checked. They are monitored and asked to be reevaluated and assessed and marked. So this is what you mean when you tell me this, Zach. This is are you trying to tell me this? Or no, but what you're really saying is, yeah, but I'm sharing because you are listening.
So it's not trying to interpret in the moment, but just to give space to that story?
Absolutely.
It's really difficult.
Absolutely. And how do you do that? And it takes I don't know, maybe my dad does it effortlessly. There are students that I live alongside that do this effortlessly. And I find myself, hopefully sometimes, depending on where I am and if I'm tired and if I'm, you know, depending on where I am. And I guess I don't mean physical space of where I am. Listening well. And I don't think it's an always thing. But if it's a difficult, messy story, to be in the midst with story is not comfortable. And can you easily be there? So when a student comes up and says, well, you know, I was raped, or my dad beats me, or I'm thinking of not going to university next year, or you know what, I decided, you know, I got an A on this paper.
So talk to me a little bit, if you would, please. because I would imagine you are beholden to the same curriculum that I would find in other schools.
Yes.
So how does story and nouns and parts of speech, other parts of speech, and gerunds and participles, and how do you make room for that? Do you make room for that, or do you say kind of,
oh, yeah,
we're done with this. We're going to focus on story, because I could see myself getting lost in story for the entire school year.
Well, I'm not able to separate the two. We have journals, and the students and I communicate back and forth with journals. So the students share, and I respond in their journals. But often, and we have open mic events where we share, but primarily it is through our journals, and spending a great deal of time at every break in our story space. So those places, it's interesting because you can think of them as spaces, but they aren't the space we create wherever we are. So yeah, the traditional language learning course is there, and it runs its course. And I think it's more comforting than a traditional course. A great deal of narrative assessment, which we build into our portfolios, of course, because that's comfortable for us. But we find a way to story, and we do build in a structured story time into our 6-day cycle. But that has also come from the students who say, this is what we need. And then that's structured, and they decide how they want that assessed and evaluated. But it is those moments that exist out of the regular 60 minutes of a class period, as well as.
So you said 6-day cycle. What does that mean?
Oh, we have at our school, our week is 6 days long, so like a 6-day schedule.
Oh, okay. It's the school wide, not just in the classroom.
Yes.
Excellent. All right, that makes sense. So talk to me, if you would. I love reading your blog. and sometimes to the detriment of my coursework. But thanks for that, actually, because sometimes the reading for my coursework is not nearly as interesting. Most of the times, it's not as nearly as interesting as what you're writing. But I noticed that oftentimes you include citations. You include parenthetical citations in your blog posts. What's that about?
Well, I'm reading. And then I love what I'm reading. And I read too much. Well, and I don't read too well. I see, in the detriment of my outdoor ed program, I should be planning and cutting up wood for our fire making course. But that's okay. Yeah, so I source. I quote, I love King. I have read The Truth About Stories. I have it right in front of me, by Thomas King, so many times. And Dean Sharesky said to me, you need to read this again. And then I took a course last fall, and a wonderful human being said to me, you need to read it again. And I don't even know if I read it the first 10 times. So I'm delighting in this work.
Say the name of the book and the author again, please.
The Truth About Stories by Thomas King.
Okay. It's funny because every time I see that citation, I think that you are citing Stephen King's book on writing.
I love Stephen King's book on writing. With the kids the other day, I love that as well. But no, it's not. I should probably put the T in front of King. But no, I mean Thomas King.
Excellent. Well, now I have more to read. It's fantastic. So if you could, please, talk to me a little bit more about other things that you're reading now. Not necessarily about story, but what's got your brain? What's taking up your brain space?
Well, certainly Clendinden and Connolly's work on not only narrative inquiry, but relational narrative inquiry, which is both theory and methodology, all wrapped into one. And I certainly, it is a storing verb way of being with students. It's new, it's been around only 10 years, and it's their work is fantastic. So composing diverse identities is the text that I'm really living with right now. But certainly narrative inquiry, so how we become co-participants of our, I will say research, but I am not comfortable with that term at all, with students. And
why not comfortable with research?
Because research has a question, and research will hope to find an answer, and there is neither with narrative inquiry.
So what are you working toward?
Stories. Telling, listening, and honoring stories.
How do you talk to or answer somebody who says that story sounds simplistic? When it sounds,
yes.
Right? I mean, doesn't it sound almost childish, right? That's where we first encounter story, is in childhood.
Yeah,
tell me a story. How do you move it to something that is actually adult and worthy of professional consideration?
Right. And so how is it possible that people get their PhDs and teach at universities and write academic papers and books, right? This is messy work. We are our stories. And how does it have validity? How is it not important? Have you ever lost someone? Have you ever loved someone? Have you ever been hit or beaten by someone? Have you ever done that to somebody? Have you ever sold drugs or been successful or been empowered to do or change something? These are the biggest, most life-changing events ever. And if they are not the most important things to share ever, I don't know what is. And we live in a world, and I don't know if you do, but I'm fairly certain that everywhere, where kids who are not allowed to share, they find a place to share. So if that isn't in our own schools, that's somewhere in a different place. So that's with friends someplace else. And you talked about these idyllic families and idyllic faith, and that's a beautiful notion. And it works sometimes, but most often for many schools, and we used to call them early school leavers, but what happens if they can't tell their stories and their stories aren't honored? And I have to tell you, policies and initiatives and agendas do not honor all students. They honor a very small minority of students. And when you can honor and listen to youth, they become bonded to place through their stories. So yeah, it's incredibly important work. And it does sound simplistic, and it's incredibly not easy.
So what do you say? So I love the answer of the person who answering the critic with, well, have you ever had one of these moments happen in your life? I love that because it turns it right back around. I would anticipate the response being, yes, I've had that and it did impact me. How does that going to get me a job? Right. How does telling this story going to, right. That's.
Well, it's funny because my first reaction is, well, I don't care as long as we keep our kids in school.
Well, I would be inclined to agree with you, but I know, at least down here in the States, the watchwords of education have become college and career ready.
Oh, yeah.
So okay. So how, college, like, to right. to make the argument for story and giving space for story in schools, if you want to do it surreptitiously, you have to find a way to draw those connections between college and career and okay. giving space for story.
I thought you were talking about you as being Zach and me as okay.
But, no, 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 no. More of a larger picture.
Okay. Okay. Well, when you can retell and relive your own narrative, our own narratives as youth, you're no longer, well, you're no, okay. You're not, okay. I'm trying to think of a story. I haven't told you a story, Zach. I have to tell you a story. I'm trying to think of one, and now I'm on the spot, and I can't think of one. I know that when my kids, they're exhausted, and when when our kids retell, they're tired, but they're aware. And see, once you've heard a story, your positionality is never the same. You can't unhear it. And that's King's work for you, but you can't. And although parents may not want to hear it, and community members may say, you know what, we don't want to hear about these stories of addiction and abuse. They don't happen in our idyllic little communities. But they've heard it. And once heard, right, it changes everything. And it gives them the sense of empowerment to be able to go and live with those agendas and say, you know what, I'm not going to accept this story that you keep giving to me. I will restory. I will tell my own story. I will create a counter story that pushes that norm, that pushes it out of the way, and I can tell my own narrative, not the grand narrative, my own narrative. I know that that's important work. When I was in grade four, I don't know if I wrote about this, grade five. I don't know if I wrote about this on my blog, so you can stop me. I was in, went to Resource, and I went every week. And
you went to where? I'm sorry. This is where our Canadian and American language just doesn't work.
It was, and it's not called Resource Room any longer. It has a new term, but it's where students with any sort of cognitive challenges go. And
okay, so a special education pullout,
special program. Ed, and yeah. It was messed up because okay, it was just messed up. And I went, and my teacher had instructed the resource room teacher to have me record my spelling words into a tape recorder. So I would record my weekly spelling words into a tape recorder. I'd go back to the classroom, and she'd play my spelling words for the whole class to hear. And I was never able to spell them correctly. And so every Friday, my mistakes were played for the class as entertainment. By May, I had developed a different strategy, and I had my first list where I the first time I got, I was able to recite a word correctly. Of course, just memorizing a word. And one of the classroom students, I didn't like, it's a long story, but he said, she got that right. And the teacher said, no, Corey never gets them right. And she went on.
Oh my God.
And she went on and she went on to the other student who was with me, who went to Resource. And he said, so she listened to his tape recorder. And of course, singling out the two students who went to Resource first before she'd listened to the other kids, their recordings. Now this happened at 1 p.m. and at 2:15, I grabbed my sweater from the coat hook and I walked home. And I mean, that's one of those moments where my life changed, because I knew I would change it. I was not going to be storied by her, the way she labeled me as dumb and someone who needed to go to Resource and lesser than, and always being those spelling words. And I walked home and I refused to return to that school. And there's always been part of me who refused to stand up, or there's always been part of me who wanted to give voice to the silent stories. And that was the first time, going back and reflecting, that I knew that that was my story to tell, to give voice. And it was interesting because my mom then was a director of education and my dad was a school teacher in the division. And I refused to go back. 2 weeks later, I started at a different school, and I think my teacher might have been Anna Green Gables. She was amazing. But it's situations that's why you have to change the narrative. I have to make it my own. The kids, you can continue to be storied one way. When I started at the other school, and I'm sure that my mom's role played and her privilege, the great economic privilege that my parents had, their privilege in the school division, starting at the new school 2 weeks later. I'm sure my mom's power in the division found me a place in that new school. And within 8 months, I started in the gifted program. It was interesting. I might have been one of those kids who stayed and was storied without testing a certain way. Now, I know how important it is to share, to allow kids to have their own voice and to share and to be co-constructors of curriculum, to be curriculum makers in the class, to have their narrative, have room and space in a learning place.
So,
go ahead.
No, I thought you were done. I didn't mean to interrupt. talking about story and listening, I'm hyper aware of not interrupting right now. I think it's interesting, and I kind of want to go back to the point you made at the beginning about coming home as a young girl and your father being there and having the basin of marking and listening and how much that meant to you. But as you talk just now, it's interesting because you're making a point that it's as important for the listener as it is for the speaker, right? You were talking about for these students, giving them spaces to tell those stories and to story themselves. But it sounds like it is as important for the listener to hear those stories, not only to tell them again, but in the decisions that they make later on. And so I found myself going back to you, to the story about your dad and just thinking how much better of a parent he probably was because he heard those stories. And giving the space to that, let him be your father in a way that was different and more informed than I think a lot of parents are. And it's just an interesting perspective because I think a lot of times when we talk about story, we talk about the importance for the students or for the teller, like, oh, you just need to get this out. You need to be heard. And I think that's valid, but I had not really thought about the importance for the listener, and what that might mean. So thanks for that. I also must warn you that I am dangerously close to the bottom of my cup of coffee. So we are almost done.
All right.
So I guess wrapping it up, how are you going to take this to a deeper level? How are you going to learn and do more? What's the next level for you in your classroom, in your practice, as a learner? Just an easy question.
It's not an easy question. We're tired. We're tired. We've attended well to each other. It's time to ask now what? How can we now attend to our families and to our community? What will that look like? What will that feel like? How can we live without being near each other? How can we create new relational spaces? I think those are really important questions. Can those spaces, is it possible to create them again once we've already had a trusting space? I don't know. I hope so.
I think it's kind of perfect, given the comment about research, that maybe we should end it there on the I don't know. Ending it on a big question seems like it's apropos for this particular conversation.
I think so too.
Corey, thank you very much for making time and space to have this conversation. I really appreciate it. And thank you for the thoughtfulness of your practice. If people are listening, and who's to say that they are, and they want to know more about your wisdom and your thinking, where can they follow you and find you online?
They can follow me on at Twitter for sure, and on my Twitter is listed my blog. So
okay, and that, your Twitter is Corey Saas, and it's CoriSaaS.
You bet.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Corey.
Thanks,
Seth. Go have a great rest of your day.
We will.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Learning Grounds. I'm Zach Chase. Our intro and outro music comes from New Dance Boys Mission, and it's called Intro. It's licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike license. Learning Grounds is also licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike license. I dare you to say it three times fast. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.